when he was pulling a tooth, he wouldn't charge him.
You wouldn't charge him.
And only 50 cents if he hollered.
I had a young kid, well, he's still alive in Waterbury, lives over Waterbury now. I had a tractor, and it was in 1940, 41. It was an attractive thing for kids. They used to like to come up and help work on the farm and let them drive a tractor when we could. Well, it seems we had two of them. The boys were shoveling, and with the dung fork, they got a little carried away, and one of them, the fork went through between into his hand, and I took him down to Dr. Shaw. He looked at it. He had his little rod with a ball on the end of it to poke in, to probe. He poked in. This kid was trying to make me impress the world what a brave and strong soul he was. And Doc probed around to be sure there wasn't any dirt or anything, and then poked out anything that was. And he had a hold of his hand, so he couldn't get away. He says, "It hurt." "Yeah, of course it hurt." He bandaged up with a salve. It looked for all the world like tar, but it healed up and got along well. But I said, "When I get ready to go," I said, "Doc, how much owe you?" He says, "Oh, give me a half a dollar. If you have to cut his hand off, I'll charge you a little more."
Well, Earl talks about, and I forget who he treats, but there's some guy that has hemorrhoids, and he just laces him with iodine, and he comes back, the poor guy is sitting in a pan of water, but he claims the next day he's fine. And if he could stand the pain.
Well, this is Dr. Sile. He's down here to walk to Waitsfield. He ran the medical center.
Dr. Sile?
Sile, S-A-I-A, I guess it was. He was there for a time in Waitsfield. I think he later went down to Berlin. I'm not sure, but he in the College of Medicine now. But anyhow, I went down for some minor thing, and I saw he had a propane torch sitting up on his shelf. I says, "What in the world would you use a propane torch for?" I says, "Oh, treating piles. Never had one come by." And then he went on to explain it.
Wow. Pretty drastic.
So he never had one come back. But then he explained to me that if anybody pinches a fingernail, that he had a needle or pin, hold it in a torch and get it red hot, and just touch it, and it would melt the nail and relieve the pressure, and there's no pain involved. But he was pulling my leg at the time. I was rather amused. Yeah. When you're talking about Earl.
Well, I guess Earl was, he went to veterinary school, he said, out in Chicago. I couldn't figure out what kind of a veterinary school, but a lot of it he got from his father, I guess.
I would put more credence in the last part of the statement, but
he was out in Chicago for a while, and it was, I don't know, I could never understand what kind of school or what he actually did.
Well, I don't know anything about it. I make no comment on it. However, he was very, very good farm nurse. I remember one time my uncle had a horse that was sick, and he called Earl, and he came up. I don't know, Earl went in and looked at the horse and gave him some of his medicine, and my uncle said, think he's gonna die? Earl said, I'm sure of it. But I don't think now.
Well, he sounds like he was quite a humorous guy.
Yes, he was.
Was he generally liked, or?
Yeah, he was, the whole world liked him. This is a funny little thing that, well, before that, he lived up in Fayston at the time and went down to a minstrel show. And one of the fellows said, you see that sign down there? Earl Fuller head up? Earl Fuller veterinarian? You get a picture of a bird on it. Yeah, he's a bird on it. Duck. Quack, quack! However, to tell one on Earl, I thought was the whole story. And I've heard this before. In fact, I heard it from a man, Jocelyn, who ran the feed mill down to Waitsfield. He told his side of it. I've heard the other side too. Earl lived up in Fayston, ran a farm up there, and he bought grain from Jocelyn, and he had a feeling that Jocelyn was charging him more than he ought to for the grain. And well, Jocelyn came up. He had a few cows in the village. In fact, he lived just as you go into Waitsfield Village from here. The mill that he ran is where the Miramar Ski Club is in Waitsfield now. It burned, I guess, nearly 50. It was rebuilt, but never. But that was before Jocelyn died before then.
Which Jocelyn was this?
Stephen S.P. He sold grain and in order to speed the collection of the bill, he went up and he was going to buy a cow from Earl. Earl said, well, she isn't in now, but I got one that's a real good milker. She gets a good mass. And Steve went up the next day, and there the cow was in the barn, just as Earl told him it would be. She had a beautiful big bag. Well, Steve took her, led her home, and sat down and milked her. And as he milked, all he was getting was air. Earl used to have milk fever was one of the things that that he treated quite well, the treatment they had then was to inflate the udder with air so that it produced suppression and stopped the production of milk. So he had taken his instrument, he'd filled this up, and he figured that it would kind of even out the score.
So does the guy keep the cow?
Yeah, he bought her.
That's
it was that or nothing. Well, it went on for, I was a kid going down the Grange at this time. Mrs. Somerville, it was Thelma Ricketts' mother, she was down at the Grange, one of the staunch patrons of the Grange. And I use the word matron, it's describing a lady rather than in the office. At that time they ran the fair, which Warren Grange ran a fair on the flat behind Our Lady of the Snows Church now. It's a big flat up, and they had a nice little fair there. Well, in running the fair and having the shows, they naturally had to buy some hay and grain, probably grain from Jocelyn, and somebody complained that Jocelyn had charged them more for the grain that they had got than they thought he should have. And Mrs. Somerville got up and she said, perhaps if Jocelyn had beat the Grange, that they ought to have Brother Fuller sold him as a cow.
To say that again?
If Jocelyn had overcharged the Grange, perhaps he ought to get Brother Fuller to sell him another cow.
Well, I gather he was quite a dealer.
He was. A lot of the things that were attributed to him as being crooked or dishonest was either retaliation or a game. He played life a lot like a game of checkers.
Some humor as well.
Yeah, but if he could outsmart somebody. He was a clever horseman, no question about it. I heard my neighbor up here, Casey Jones, we called him. He lived over here at one time on the hill, just on the other side. And he broke horses from a early manhood. And Casey tells that one morning he was going out to get his cows, and Earl apparently had taken a horse out to break early in the morning before there was any traffic on the road, and it seems that he was up there somewhere near where that Casey could see him on the road, and the horse got away from him. He said he caught the horse, but he never saw a man run so in his life. So he was reasonably athletic under pressure, because he was something like this book that Real Vermonter don't milk goats. I noticed there's one page that particularly amused me. It said, "Real Vermonters don't jog, but will run if pressed." When the old fellow had a swarm of bees chasing him. So Earl was pressed.
Yeah, he was a little slight guy, I guess.
Yeah, he was. No. Well, I don't know where you draw the line slight, but he wasn't a big man.
I just knew him, you know, yeah. And by that time he was not getting around well in the days I interviewed him, which was in the early 80s.
Yeah. Well, I remember him from...
When did he die? 83, 4?
I think he was close to 100 when he died. I would say somewhere along in there.
Yeah, I think so. And his wife must be dead now too, Nan.
Yeah, she died a year or so ago.
Yeah, she must have been right up there too.
Yeah, they weren't very, very far apart. I guess she was a little younger than he was. I don't.
Yeah.
I never knew her that much. I knew his first wife much better.
And she died of cancer.
Yeah. This was quite a while ago.
And then he said he sold his farm and went to blacksmithing.
Well, he went blacksmithing, I think, previous to his wife dying. They lived there in the village, and he ran the blacksmith shop.
Yeah.
He rented it from Blake, I guess.
Fred Blake or?
Floyd Blake, yeah.
Frank Blake.
Yeah. Frank Blake was, his wife was daughter of granddaughter of Nett McAllister. You know, I told you that she married Bill McAllister, who was a part-time carpenter. Part-time fox hunter and part-time carpenter. That's a little story to tell about him. He took pride in being a good carpenter, and somebody wanted him to hang a door. And he insisted it was not the right way to do it, but if they wanted it hung that way, fine, he would hang it. But if you ever tell anybody what damn fool hung that, I'll punch you in the nose. Well, it seems that somebody inquired that. He fulfilled the agreement. I could tell you the name. See, it come up to me sometime. It's the first house up on the Lincoln Gab Road.
But Earl told a number of stories of people up there.
Yeah.
I guess the Hartshorns lived up there.
Frank Hartshorn, yes. His daughter is Kit Hart, or his daughter-in-law is Kit Hartshorn. His grandson is chief of the fire department here, and his oldest son Paul is, he drives a log truck. He had a farm down below Waitsfield, and his son took it over. But I started to say, Frank Blake's wife, Wilmine, was a granddaughter of Annette McAllister. They had a son and a daughter, Jesse McAllister and Wilmine. Well, Jesse never really got into hard work, if he could help it. And Frank was a prosperous, hardworking man. And one time he said to Wilmine, "I'll give you $100 if you get your brother's recipe for living without working." That was back in the days when $100 was $100. They've since added a zero onto it to keep it up, and the government's going to put a couple more on if we don't watch them. But when they put the new road, the blacktop road through Warren, they eliminated that blacksmith shop.
Uh-huh. Where was it?
As you go down to Warren and turn to go north, as you get into the village, there's I guess you can still see a piece of a cement foundation almost tight to the road, but originally the road was narrower, and the shop stood in right tight to the road, so they had to buy the shop. I think the road went through there. So in the mid-50s, something like that.
Huh.
But the interesting thing about this road, Roy Long was one of the businessmen in town, and it was Herb Wheeler and Clayton Neal that ran a little garage farther down, since burned. The town owns the land now. It's just it's on the west side just of the road, just as you come through the bridge, which is in the north end of town.
Yeah.
There's a little area there the town owns now. They used to have a telephone booth there, but it's a turnout. And there was some opposition to building the road around the town, because these fellows doing business thought it was going to take the traffic away from them. And it was all planned in the late 40s to, or very early 50s, to relocate the road. And there was some opposition, and they went up to the highway department and voiced their concern, and they accommodated them. Some of those fellows up there in the highway department had camps up in Callis and North Montpelier, so they obliged them and paved the road up through there. It was 5 years or more after that before we got our road. But that was the center of the activity of the town back when the town was dependent upon horses and transportation. In fact, going over the mountain on slippery days in winter, they might come in early in the morning and get the cork sharpened up. At the blacksmith shop, he'd go in and take off the shoe and sharpen the corks. That was before the days of giant grip or whatever they had, that you could remove the corks and change them.
Yeah.
They had to take the shoe off, put it in the forge, and hammer them on the Well, on the corking vise, get a new cutting edge so they could walk on the ice. I mean, that's before the days of sand to salt.
Yeah, Earl says that his father, I guess his grandfather, had a blacksmith shop on the place.
I think I can still show.
Did you have a blacksmith shop here?
No.
No.
There was a blacksmith shop on the airport road.
There. Uh-huh.
Joe Drew, I think it was, ran a blacksmith shop. Served the mm-hmm. center of East Warren.
Yeah.
East Warren at one time was a center. Yeah, there's a blacksmith shop right there.
Oh. Uh-huh. Now that must be gone too.
Yeah.
Isn't that a crime?
I remember when that building was there. In fact, my memory goes back into the 20s, so.
Mm-hmm. How did your mother happen to become a photographer or take these glass plate negatives?
Well, this Will Blaz you spoke about, it seems that the Blair family always went off and tried to find some easy way to make a living, in addition to their farming operation. And Will took pictures, tinkered watches, fixed harnesses, fixed shoes, and he had a few cows to fall back on, whichever way it was. But it was a cottage industry, actually, as we see it now. And he went around taking pictures and took pictures for people.
What happened to his photographs?
So far as I know. They were destroyed sometime along the way. There was an Ern Chase from Waitsfield. You probably have run across him. His photograph. He had oodles of plates, and Malcolm Reese bought all of those. I don't know if you ever see The World, Judy Reese.
Yes, yeah.
It's her husband. If you met him on the street, you'd think you'd met Abraham Lincoln. And I don't mean that in a derogatory way, but there is a striking resemblance.
I'll be done. And so he has a lot of these photographs?
He has a lot of those glass negatives that Ern Chase did. Ern did pretty much the same thing, but in a bigger way. In fact, I think he had a business in Montpelier.
Uh-huh. Now, is Malcolm Reese in Waitsfield?
Yeah, he's on, turning left at the Maple Lane Farm and going down to Waitsfield Village. You go straight through and, it's probably a mile, just beyond Donnie Jocelyn's house on the right. I don't know if the telephone company has acquired any of those or not. I think they did. You've probably seen.
Who's the person to talk with at the telephone company?
Susan Sims or Dana Haskin. Have you seen their? You must have seen their telephone directory.
Yes.
Did you see the 78 one they had too?
Well, I'm not sure which one I've seen, but they have little histories of.
There's a recent one, and then there was one that they did.
I saw the recent one, I think.
I think they did one in 78 that was the history of the telephone.
Mm-hmm. I haven't
seen that one. I won't bother to look it up now, but I will get it.
Great.
Well, maybe I might be able to put my hand on it immediately. If I don't, I won't waste a lot of time. And Ian.
Mm-hmm. Who owned
There's a 79 version.
Yeah, I know, I haven't, oh yeah. It's interesting that the telephone company is interested in doing this. It's great.
I suspect some of those negatives probably came from Ern Chase's collection.
Mm-hmm.
I also suspect that perhaps Dana and Mrs. Haskins, Eleanor, have acquired most of the things that Malcolm had, in addition to a lot of other ones.
Malcolm Reese.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, so you think he has?
He originally got them from a Chase estate. There's a Mrs. Chase who outlived her husband by quite a bit. There's Alden Bettis who lives below the below Waitsfield.
Alden Bettis.
He has a very good memory of, in fact, there's a picture of him in the, his father, or his mother died, and he went to live with his aunt, which was, grew up here in East Warren, or in Western Bart of Warren, up on the edge of the Gulf. Him as a young fellow driving a milk truck in one of these.
Who's this guy?
Well, I would have no recollection. See, that's in Waitsfield. I can deny any knowledge of it without.
I see, right.
Without admitting I forgot. It was a kind of an interesting little anecdote. I heard about Mr. Smith that ran the trucking and teaming business. And there's a picture of Alden, when he was a young fellow. I think you'd be interested in talking to Alden.
Oh, yeah. Okay, I will.
He probably would remember quite a lot more than I would. He's a year older than I am.
And he grew up in Warren?
Yes, Warren and Waitsfield. But he mostly grew up in on the West Hill in Warren. He and I graduated from grammar school in 1932 together. Well, he graduated from Warren Grammar School. I was up here in East Warren, but all in the same town. I remember this Clarence Hartshorn had a truck, a stake-bodied truck, and the teachers in Warren hired him to take a group of, probably was close to 20 of us, maybe not that many, graduated from the eighth grade, and they took us down to North Beach, down to Burlington for a celebration. I hate to say this, I could swim, but that was the first time I wore a bathing suit. I had to run that one.
You had to rent it? Would you mostly swim in the brooks and streams here?
Yeah.
Was there a particularly good swimming hole around?
Well, there was one that was big enough to swim in, not too far from here. And then when they put the blacktop road in, they ruined it for the kids. Up on the brook coming up this way, you can still see where the water ran down over, and they ruined it by moving a road over. They ruined the swimming hole, but there was a with brush going along beside the road there, and very good place to go swimming, not too far from the main road.
I didn't mean to interrupt you, but I sidetracked you from talking about your mother starting to take pictures, but you said it was sort of Will Blair.
Well, I suspect, but it seems to be something that in the genes, I guess, it didn't. Tinker do other things. Well, it's the same as she became interested in the history of the town. It's he intrigued her. And she complained that, well, of course, I came along and confused the thing later, but when she first started taking pictures, they got their chemicals from Germany. And then as Germany went to war, couldn't get the chemicals, and they weren't as good. She had trouble, and my daughter gave me a book, The Progress of And in that book, it told, and some I couldn't find it now, but it told the same thing that she did, that the chemicals came from Germany, and there was a time when picture taking was very difficult.
And she started, what, about 1910, you said?
Probably a little previous to that.
And stopped